one of the things that we do at UK NOF meetings is to try and record some of the history and prehistory of the UK internet community and industry, stretching back into the early days in the 80s and 90s. We've managed to drag quite a few people out from the past to talk about this. I'm pleased to say that today's speaker is still very much an active participant and visionary in the European internet. So today we don't just have a UK perspective, we have a European perspective. So I'm pleased to introduce Rob Bloxall from Rhipe, who's going to talk about some of his experiences over the years.
Thank you, Keith, and I am the current and for a long time chairman of Rhipe, but I'm standing here this afternoon going back so far in history, even before the days Rhipe were, Rhipe was conceived, so I thought I'll be here as an old network user and builder. So what I want to talk about is triggered by something I mention at Rhipe meetings when we do, at the beginning of a meeting, some introduction to people who come for the first time to a Rhipe meeting. And one of my slides there is this one, where I try to explain the landscape in the days when a couple of us got together and started Rhipe, and that is the bit at the bottom. We were in the midst of what some people call protocol wars. This is the mid-80s. All sorts of networking protocols were in play, and a bit later I will go through some of them. It was a rather confused time. Most computer manufacturers had their own idea of how computer networking should be done, so there were a lot of proprietary technologies going around, and there was this thing coming from across the ocean called TCP/IP. But there was another development. The European PTTs were a main driver after behind something called OSI, Open System Interconnect, and that was the way to the future, a well-defined way of doing computer networking with very precise definitions and specifications and applications, even all in one huge package. Well, there's nothing wrong with that, but there was one nagging problem behind the scenes. These were mainly European PTTs, telephone companies, which were practically all of them were still wholly owned by European governments. These were the good old days of monopolies in the field of telecommunication. So governments were also playing a very strong role in the discussions on where in Europe computer networking, in which direction it should be going. And the general feeling was in governmental circles, OSI is good because it's invented by the phone companies, our phone companies, and TCP/IP is bad because it was not invented by our phone companies. So, that's all very simple, but then 1985 or so, the first rumblings appeared about this OSI, and I must say when last week or so I went through some boxes with old papers in my old office, and I found this I had completely forgotten about it, but in 1985, FinServ composed a song about OSI. Those of you who come regular to Rhipe meetings know that nowadays songs can be very powerful in describing problematic technologies, like we have had songs about IPv6 and things like that. But it's apparently a very old technology that has been in use for quite a while. These are just three bits of a very long song. I have not found it on the internet, but so it doesn't seem to be archived in any modern way. And when I see FinServ next, I'll ask his permission to publish it so you can see it in its full glory. Also, of course, it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek because Tannenbaum is not only a Christmas tree in German, it's also the author of a very series of popular books on networking. So, the fact that already in 1985 songs were being composed on OSI probably indicates that there were some problems. And there were more rumblings, even from the part of the governments. In 1989, I think the European Union and the member states, the European Union did not exist in 1989. In 1989, we had the Commission of the European Communities, predecessor of the European Union. Same people, same office buildings, different name. And one of the high-level officials of the European Commission in those days, who was involved very strongly with promoting OSI, had an OSI dedicated meeting in Brussels in 1989, said, well, it's all very well, but it seems to have a constant property. It is just around the corner. It's ready to be deployed. But for some reason, it's not being picked up. And that sounds a little bit familiar if you think today about IPv6, for instance. Another technology that is more than 10 years old, just around the corner, and is not being picked up. But things, life went on. The Commission was putting lots of money in technology that not many people wanted for some reason or another. And the thing that came out of this was a network initiative called IXI, International X25 Interconnect. These were the good old days of X25. Most European PTTs had deployed on a national scale a public X25 network. Some of these networks were interconnected. Now, all these protocols coming out of the PTT corner had one very interesting feature. They had been debated for 10 years in large committees. Committees which were driven by government officials. So their negotiating technology, they had one very strong tool. If you can't agree, you compromise. And that means that conflicting opinions were all written down in the protocol specifications. And then when you went home, you, with an ever-increasing pile of books, I think the last time I managed to convince my directors at the research institute where I was working to spend, I think the last time we spent about 2,000 Swiss francs to buy such a pile of books giving some specifications of a subset of these protocols. If you look at it, it's clearly impossible to implement it. You have to make choices because there were conflicting recommendations. Some areas which were needed to make something work were left intentionally blank because no compromise could be reached. So the end result was, if 25 PTTs implemented, for instance, X25, you had at least 20 non-compatible implementations. And so on a European scale, to do European-wide communications, we have invented something else, an X75 international gateway. Nobody understood how that really worked. Sometimes it worked, most of the times not. If you were going from country A to B, on the average, you would pass 3 or 4 other countries. So you had a series of these gateways behind each other, and the net result usually was that not a single packet managed to cross all these gateways. This was the governmental approved technology. So even governments and the commission thought that can't be, that's not a good sales argument. So money was put in into a project called the International X25 Interconnect to have at least a subset of the national networks interconnected in a way that worked. And this is the result. It was a double star network, 1 star in Amsterdam and 1 in Bern. Why these 2 places? Well, in Amsterdam there was a couple of active groups of network builders. There were the particle physicists who were sharing a building with the mathematical center. MCFAX rings a bell for some of you. It's those people who met each other every day in the common canteen and built out their networks. Bern, it's 1 letter away from CERN, another international hotspot of networking in the 80s. Again, the particle physics community. And it took quite some convincing for the people who, for political reasons, decided how this network should look like, that Amsterdam and CERN were the 2 obvious choices. At least the community thought that. Well, again, this is a compromise, so 1 was all right, but 2 of the rogue elements in 1 network is too much, so they put the second node in CERN and then in Bern, and then CERN, with the help of what later became Switch, the Swiss university network, they I think managed to get a 1 megabit connection between CERN and Bern, because CERN was where everybody wanted to go to. This was a 64 kilobit network, which was considered to be high speed, and it generated quite a lot of traffic at the end. And everybody was happy because the operator of this network, one of the European PTTs, could show to the commission that X25 was a success. And the users were happy because Cisco had just come out with encapsulating IP in X25, and that's what we did at CERN and in Amsterdam. And the users saw the first true international European IP network. And I couldn't care less what went on the layers below, because that was politics. And this was taken from the one of the network management stations, and in the upper right-hand corner it says no alarms. That was very reassuring, I think. Of course, this went a lot went on behind the screens, but some of it leaked out, and I found a couple of nice headlines. This is again from 1989, I think, where this publication doesn't exist anymore, but in those days they it carried quite a few interesting bits and pieces, and this is an interview with some of the players from the user side criticizing basically the waste of money and effort to keep politicians happy and still get some real packets flowing. A good friend of mine from CERN, François Fugger, is not only a very good network engineer, he also has a very nice sense of humor and has some artistic talents. So I found this one among a bundle of cartoons he made. I don't know whether you can all read it, but from top till bottom, the balloons say, "And you," the guy on the right says, "How many packets on your net?" And the one on the left says, "6 last week." And he says, "Oh, lucky you are." He says, "Yeah, but that was my test program." This is the X25 observation packet station. And we had the right meeting 2 weeks ago, and some people presented measured amount of traffic on the IPv6 part of the internet, and that reminded me of the previous slide very much. But then the famous or infamous secret working group in their archives already explained that we all have a misconception of what IPv6 is. IPv6 is just toothpaste or chewing gum or whatever. So the internet was growing in Europe as an underground movement, behind the scenes, whatever. And some of us got together in 89, because there were a couple of small minor details that needed sorted out. The internet grew in general out of university campuses. You can tell universities thou shalt not spend money on TCP/IP, and it is I am the government and I'm giving you the money, but I tell you don't spend it on TCP/IP, but things happen. So more and more islands of internet technology started growing in Europe, and people have friends. So what would happen if I would connect to your island? Well, that's interesting. It works. Oh, but I have a friend as well. And then it stopped working, because we were all working out of the same documents explaining how to build an IP network, and Appendix A said, this is what you type in. So duplicated addresses were rather common. If you connect two islands, you don't have a routing problem. If you have three of these islands, you have to think about routing already. So a couple of people came together in 89 for half a day and said, let's sort it out once and for all. Well, that was an optimism that should be admired. 2 weeks ago we had another ripe meeting, and we had 500 people talking a whole week about basically the same problems. But as our friend Horst Hünke said, if we ignore RIPE, we ignore the real requirements. If we accept RIPE, we sin against the holy principles of standardization. I think TCP/IP is rather well standardized. We have standards there, but what he meant is it's not our standard. So we had the François Fugger again. Thank you, François. What did he do? Man on the stake. He said, we like IP. Or he said, dislike IP. Whatever you did in those days, it was never right. Another government official, Arne Moy from Norway. His function in the civil service was he was the highest civil servant in the ministry. His title was State Secretary for Telecommunications and Church Affairs. Norway is a small country, so they can't afford big government, and so you lump certain things together. And Arne Moy was, among all these government officials, one of the good guys, by the way, because he took the trouble of trying to understand what they were discussing and trying to understand why, when government said we go